Number one. From the number one college town in the Big 12. Big 12. We're back with the Purple Project Podcast with Eddie Greer.
Welcome on campus to the Purple Project Podcast. On the menu, this podcast is all about the latest developments in Kansas State athletics. From football to basketball and everything else in between the college town of the Little Apple, it's the Purple Project Podcast. And now your host, Eddie Greer III.
K-State Nation, what's happening, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition, episode 140, home of the Big 12 champions in football. Chris Kleiman and the Wildcats here on the Purple Project Podcast. All things K-State, we're recording episode 140 on January 12th, 2023. Of course, your host Eddie Greer and co-host Alex Aiden, K-State graduates, now alums, and of course, we are also Wildcat 91.9 alums, the student radio station here as well. We're going to go right on into business here. I'll do some house cleaning throughout this podcast as well, but let's not waste any more time here. Let's go ahead and bring on my co-host for the weekly edition here, Alex Aiden out there in San Diego, California. Alex, how you doing on this Thursday night?
Doing good, Eddie. Cannot complain. Well, I guess I could complain. I won't complain. I already used that once in a meeting today, so I'm just repeating lines I've used in meetings now. No, everything is good with me, and it's hard not to be good, honestly, as a Cats fan right now. The men's team is men's basketball team is playing great basketball, which we're going to talk about a lot here this evening. And then the football team lands a big time transfer in Treshawn Ward at running back, arguably one of the best, if not the best, running back transfers that there was, to pair with DJ Giddens and Joe Jackson coming in. And then Phillip Brooks announced that he's coming back, which surprised me. I didn't think he was going to be coming back. So that's a big get with them, especially having Keegan Johnson transferring in from Iowa, which was announced early on. And so, you and I were talking off the podcast here, that all of a sudden, this offense is looking pretty darn good. They need to get some things going defensively, but offensively, it's looking pretty darn good. So, good things going on, there. And you know what, Eddie, I think there's one thing we all can, really, or probably can have a consensus on. We're all doing better than I think TCU football at the moment. So. I mean, man, look, 65-7, holy smokes. I saw some people throwing around on the internet, would you have rather had TCU season or K-State season? And look, I would still rather have TCU season. I mean, I guess I know they didn't win the Big 12, but they did win. But I get it. It's debatable because, it's not debatable because you play the national championship, Eddie. You're going to take the national championship off. It's 65-7, and then you didn't win your conference either. So it's like you didn't win the Big 12. You did make the national championship, but you lost by 60. You lost by 60. Well, 58 technically, but I don't know anybody.
Still, that's an ass whooping. That's still an ass whooping.
Not good. Yeah. Well, look. Here's the thing, Eddie. Going into the game, I thought, okay, TCU's not going to win. I mean, there's no way in hell they're going to be Georgia. I mean, come on. We all knew that. The question was, could they compete with Georgia? And I thought, you know, if they can keep it within, like, I don't know, 21 points, you know, if they can keep it, like, within 21 points, you know, maybe it's under 20, you know, maybe they lose 14-20 or maybe, you know, something 17-20, then, okay, you know, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, there won't be... You know, and it's, you know, it's fine. K-State lost to what? Bama by 25. So, I mean, even if they would have lost 45-20 the way K-State lost to Bama to Georgia, it's like, okay, you know, at least you, you know, hung around, kept it kind of competitive. But, man, 65-7, you can't be doing that, man. You got to look. I don't think K-State would have lost 65-7. I could be wrong. Maybe they would have, but 65-7, good grief. So, that was bad enough where I had people who are not Big 12 fans texting me saying, what a bad look for the Big 12. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh, here we go. So, Yeah, I think we all can say if you're feeling bad about Alabama, look at that game and you'll feel a hell of a lot better about yourself. And Eddie, I think we should make t-shirts about being up 10-0 on Alabama now, because every day it's looking like that was a bigger and bigger accomplishment that we got up 10-0 on Bama. We should feel proud of ourselves.
That's a good marketing idea right there. 10-0. Yeah, that looked way better than what the showing was from TCU. And yeah, like a whole bunch of friends on my Facebook picked TCU, actually, to win the ball game there. So they look pretty...
Bold move. Well,
they look pretty stupid.
Georgia thought they were going to go 7-5, Eddie.
Well, yeah, that was said a lot in the post game from several of those players.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
I didn't hear that, and that's weird because I didn't hear that all year long until a post game. So that was kind of out of left field there. But
I just gotta say, the conclusion I can come to is Kirby Smart is a master manipulator, because you have to be a master manipulator to convince people that Georgia was doubted and that they were going to go 7-5. Who in the hell? Do you know one person, Eddie, who predicted Georgia to, one, miss the playoffs, two, go 7-5? No, not me. Not once did I hear that. They were the favorites to win the championship almost the entire season. It's just that silly, Eddie. Silly, silly, silly. But you know what? Hey, it worked. It worked, and they made sure that they went undefeated to prove the doubters wrong. I mean, they proved them wrong.
Yeah, and also they can take Ohio State almost upset Ohio State for taking them to the limit there, because Ohio State had Georgia on the ropes, and then of course Georgia comes back there in a shank field goal wide left by the Ohio State thing there. That was way off. Not even close.
Field goal I've ever seen. Oh, and somebody said it was like they brought a fan on the field to kick that field goal. It was bad. It was awful. Oh, man.
Oh, man. But, yep,
Georgia should have lost that game. Georgia's count their lucky stars they got out of that game.
Yeah, and that, according to all the broadcasters, that should have been the quote-unquote national title game, Ohio State-Georgia, apparently. Mm-hmm. So, apparently...
Well, Ohio State shouldn't have lost by 20 to Michigan, then.
See, going back to those dominoes again, see the domino effect there. If Ohio State don't get embarrassed at home against Michigan, then we're looking at a whole different scenario as far as semifinals goes there. But that's why bring on a 12-team playoff. And that's a whole other discussion that we're not going to go dive into right now. But that is why that's there for, I believe, I think it's one more year for that before put into play. So definitely looking forward to that, because there was a lot of rumblings after the game.
We would have been breaking down K-State at Tennessee in the first round of the playoffs this year.
Yep. There was a projection of the 12-team playoff this year, what it would have been. And yeah, you're right, Alex. K-State would have been playing Tennessee in the quarterfinals or first round, whatever you want to call it, there is as well. So a lot
We would have all been mad. Because the top four conference champs get a bye, and the fifth doesn't. And Utah jumped K-State after K-State won the Big 12, and they got the fourth, and K-State would have gotten the fifth. So K-State would have been the one team that didn't get a bye. K-State would have had to go to Tennessee. So I already know we would have been arguing.
That's stupid. Yep. Uh-huh. Like, yep, that's stupid.
Like, this is stupid. K-State should have gotten a bye. They should be at home. What's more impressive, beating TCU or beating, you know, who did they play? USC.
USC.
Come on. Yep. But it would have been quite entertaining.
It would have for sure. So, boy, oh boy, that's something to look forward to down the road there.
Assuming might have had a K-State Tulane repeat game, because Tulane would have been in there too. So,
They also have them coming here real quick before we turn it back to K-State here real quick. They would have Tulane, who they beat USC in the Cotton Bowl. So,
what a great game.
That was a good game there as well. So, yeah, we'll hold that discussion for a future podcast. Speaking of TCU here, let's see. women's basketball. We'll start with women's basketball for K-State. This is a Purple Project podcast. K-State Athletics podcast, folks. On this edition, episode 140, Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden. The flipping the coin here, the women's basketball team, as we're recording this on Thursday night, lost last night on the road to 15th-ranked Iowa State by 11. The slow starts continue for Jeff Minnie's team. And they did make this a battle. They did make this a battle. But hindsight, point being now, K-State is ninth in the conference right now. Women's basketball, not men. Women's basketball, K-State Ladies Wildcats sit now. Overall, they're 12-5. The only team not in double digits in wins belong to TCU, 6-9, bottom of the conference. But ahead of them, oh, good old K-State, 12-5, but only 1-3 so far in conference play. And Alex, you talked about the schedule, you know, not being too bad for Jeff Minnie's team. Right now, four games in, they play Texas Tech on Saturday coming up. Is it time to be concerned or hit the panic button or just stay the course with the schedule?
Good question, Eddie. And I think this is something that a lot of fans are wondering about because, you know, it looked, I mean, you had your loss to Texas. That was just awful, just horrific loss on the road. But you come back home against Oklahoma State, and you get a 14-point win there, and kind of dug yourself out of a hole early a little bit, but you got that win. I think what the alarm bells, kind of what sounded the alarm bells for me was the West Virginia game, and I would say panic, no. Concerned, yes. I'm concerned, but I'm not panicked. So, yeah. I say that because that West Virginia loss, oh, bad, a bad, bad loss. That is a bad, bad loss. You can't lose games like that when the Big 12 is so tough. It's so tough. It's so difficult. And when you have got bottom, you got the bottom, I don't want to call them bottom feeder, but you got the bottom half of the Big 12 at home on your home court, and you got players in your team talking about going undefeated on that home court. You can't be losing to teams in the bottom half of the home court at home. We know K-State's better than that. We've seen it. We saw it against Iowa. You know, we saw it in some other matchups. We've seen them go on neutral courts and play really good games. We saw them beat Houston by 14 on their court. You know, we've seen them have enough moments where, you know, just, and this is just my opinion, a 7-point loss to West Virginia, that shouldn't happen. It just shouldn't happen with this team. That's a bad loss. And it was the same, I think what another reason I'm concerned at is it was kind of the same trend line that we've seen in some games. Slow starts for the Cats and just too much for them to overcome. Again, this one wasn't like as drastic. They didn't necessarily get like an enormous one, but you're down 4 at the end of 1. You get outscored by 4 in the first quarter. You get outscored by 6 in the second quarter. You're down double digits at halftime. You put yourself behind the 8-ball, trying to scrap back. You know, you have a good third quarter. You cut the deficit to 3 going to the fourth quarter, but you're not able to finish the deal, and you end up losing that game by 7. That was West Virginia's first win of Big 12 play, and it really came on, again, a K-State and a slow start for the Cats. And, they never really shot the ball well, and I think that that's part of the problem, too. If you look at the quarter-by-quarter stat breakdown of that game, they started slow, shooting 37% there in the first quarter. They ended slow, shooting 23% from the field in the fourth quarter, going 5-for-22 from the field, 0-for-9 from 3. Just could not get anything to drop. And another thing, Eddie, is it just felt like offensively things were a little out of whack. Get 33s. I get shooting threes, Eddie. I get having that, but 33s, that just is a little little mush. I got to find a way to get some easier buckets, right? Some easier buckets closer to the rim, especially when you're shooting 23% from three. You know, you're not hitting a lot of them. So, and you look, you are making free throws. You're getting to the line. You're 17 to 23. So get to the hoop. Get some easier looks. Try to even draw some fouls. And get something going because they were just struggling. And so that's a concern. You know, that there's no doubt that that's a concern. And then you let West Virginia get into a groove where they shot about 47% from the field and they shot 50% in the fourth quarter and. They were more balanced offense. I mean, they were just more balanced basketball team. So that was a tough loss. And look, everyone's have clunkers, Eddie. That's part of it. You know, especially when you play in a conference like the Big 12. But that one stinks. The Iowa State game, I think that there's nothing to be ashamed about in that particular game. I think what maybe is the tougher pill to swallow is that you have it. You're there with them within striking distance, and then you score 11 in the fourth quarter. You know, you're not able to get. Again, you have your worst quarter in the fourth quarter, and it kind of puts you in a bad spot. I thought K-State defensively did a nice job of limiting Iowa State. I think Iowa State only shot, 33%,
I think, from the field.
33%, yeah. So they held them. You know, they held them down. But, again, offensively, they struggled. And they shot, 33s again, 29. Again, a little high for me. They only shot 27% from three, so they weren't hitting a bunch of them. And, they just got to find a way to just get some more consistent offense. You know, like we're 56 points in the game. That's tough. And look, when you hold Iowa State to 67, I mean, you'll take that all day long. Are you kidding me? Yeah. Hold Iowa State under 70 points. So, I mean, you know, again, defensively, they did their job that game. They just couldn't get it going offensively. So, you know, Eddie, now they find themselves in a situation where they're in a bit of a funk, right? You know, things have gotten a little... this is really their first significant adversity of the season, I guess you could say. And they've got a big one with Texas Tech coming up. And Texas Tech is a team that's improved. They're 13-4 in the year. But they are 1-3 in Big 12 play. So you've got to find a way to come in and get that win. You can't lose at home to West Virginia and Texas Tech back-to-back. You just can't do that. You just cannot, especially with Baylor. On the road, looming after that. So you've got to find a way to come out and have a good performance. Have a good performance on Saturday at Bramlage, and put something together. So panic, no. Concern, yes. If they come out and lose Texas Tech, that concern meter gets turned up. Is it at the panic level yet? I don't know if I'd go that far, but it's definitely closer to panic mode if they lose to Tech. Because, again, losing to two bottom half Big 12 teams at home to start conference play, and then at that point you would be 1-4 in Big 12 play, going to Baylor, so likely 1-5. That's a bad place to be in. And we were talking about the K-State team that was ranked in the top 25, and a team that we were talking about, could they make an NCAA tournament? All of a sudden, well, maybe, could they compete in the Big 12? What could their seed be? Well, all of a sudden, they could play themselves right off the bubble. So, that's just the reality. If you start 1-5, you put yourself in a bad spot. So, they got to be Tech. They just got to be Tech. You got to make up for that loss. And we mentioned the schedule, Eddie. It's kind of, I think it's relatively favorable. So I think it's set up in a way where K-State won't go on any prolonged losing streaks. But that's assuming they beat teams like Tech.
That's assuming they beat Tech.
That's what it's about. You got to beat Tech. And then if you beat Tech and then you lose to Baylor, well, then you got to beat TCU at home. And then if you're going on the road to Oklahoma State, You just beat Oklahoma State.
You just beat Oklahoma State not too far along, though.
You got to beat them before you play KU and Iowa State. And then, like, after you play Iowa State, you got to beat Texas Tech. You know, so, so the same thing. You know, there's winnable games that are sprinkled throughout, but you got to win those games. And you let one slide against West Virginia. Now you got to get your next one against Tech.
Yeah, and you just played Oklahoma State not too long ago, beat them at home in Bramlage back on January 4th, 86-72 there as well. So, yeah, Texas Tech is sitting in front of K-State right now. We're talking about women's basketball here on the Purple Project Podcast, episode 140. Eddie Greer, Alex Zane. Tech is sitting in front of K-State right now. I'm going to pull a tab up here. Yeah, so it's right now. Okay, so let's just go from top to bottom, right, in the Big 12. We have Baylor, Oklahoma, Iowa State, and Texas. Three of the four of them are ranked in the top 25. The lone one, Texas, 3-1, which Texas manhandled K-State at home in the Big 12 opener. Then you have KU, ranked 23rd in the nation, followed by Oklahoma State and West Virginia. Those teams are at 2-2 right now. And then you have the other third, Tech, K-State, 1-3 each. And the poor TCU, we continue to pour on them on this podcast, 0-4, 6-9. Okay, so now, Tech Saturday, and we both mentioned Baylor, at Baylor. Woo, so you have to get this game against Tech. Yeah. There's just no doubt about it. There's no ways around it. You have to win this game. Otherwise, you're really staring at a bad hole to start off Big 12 play. And then you come back home, TCU, and then you're going back on the road to Oklahoma State. So it's a seesaw. I'm going to stop right there with the schedule right now. But seesaw, back and forth home. So, yeah, that West Virginia game was the tough one to take there for this team right there. And I wanted to mention another thing here. Jalen Glenn had herself an evening last night. Double-double for her. 17 points and 10 rebounds. And also getting 6 steals and 3 assists. And adding 2 blocks as well there, if I'm reading that correctly there as well. She had herself a game. She was the only cat in double digits last night. Iowa State's defensive game plan was to slow down Gabby Gregory, one of the top Big 12 scorers in the conference, and they did that 9 points in. It's funny because they lost by 11, and Gabby usually gives you 20-plus a night. And I'm not saying, even if she did, we could have still lost the game anyways, but just kind of running about that all day. Gabby puts up her usual, and this is going to be, that game last night could have been much more interesting there, and we talked about the Cats, Jeff Mays' crew battling back there and not making shots in the fourth quarter. That's when that comes into play as well. So they really slowed G-squared down. And I kind of referenced this in the Postgas Daily, which is going to come out on Saturday. I bring it up a little bit here that, again, it's the whole Aoka Lee factor here. I know Aoka Lee is recovered from knee surgery. And remember, Lee set the one single-game women's NCAA Division I game record with a 61, right? And all of a sudden, the Big 12 adjusted, right? I feel like the rest of the Big 12 is going to look at this tape and try to slow down Gabby Gregory and make other players try to beat them shooting the basketball. And that's where, this is where everything else comes in. So you got Jalen stepping up, and now you have to have everyone else kind of chip in, fall along. One person in double digits isn't going to cut it. You're going to have one more other scorer. And I always have say this on this podcast. You're going to have 3 scorers, right? You're going to have your main scorer, and you need 2 other scorers. So for this team, Gabby's your number one. Jalen Glenn, who has so far has a deep or good sophomore season, is your number two. Now your number three, Serena Sundell, she scored double digits before the Iowa State game. I have to go back and check that. But she's been kind of inconsistent. Still did put up good numbers. I mean, she put up good numbers. She had a good game last night, but setting some K-State records there that I mentioned in that postcast. So be out and look out for that this weekend. But so they're going to need other girls to step up there. And Emily Ebert, who... she played 21 minutes last night and only played not played, only scored 2 points. That's just not going to cut it there. You need everybody to step up. It's a team sport, and that, here coming up with a big stretch for this team coming up with the four games that we just mentioned here. If Gabby can't, if teams are focused on her, not get beat, a couple other girls have to step up.
100%, Eddie. I think you're right, and I would get back to what you said about adjustments. This is high level basketball. You know, Big 12 basketball. There's some great coaches in the Big 12 conference, and they absolutely adjusted to Ayoka Lee and what she was doing last year, and made her life more difficult, and made the K-State offense life way more difficult. So, you know, it's something that part of coaching, right? You know, seeing what teams are going to do. And there was a lot of questions about what is K-State going to do offensively without Ayoka Lee. You know, how are they going to run their offense? Who's it going to run through? Who's going to be their go-to scorer? And you know, we've seen what they've done, and they've really kind of spread things around, you know, spread things out a little bit more, playing with, you know, rather than inside out. We already mentioned that they're shooting more threes, that they're trying to play at a little bit different pace, and it's really been good for Gabby and Gregory, but slowed down a little bit. You know, things have slowed down a little bit, and I'm not sure whether or not that is defense is doing things a little bit differently or not, but I would assume that there's some things probably, as you mentioned, being put on tape by some of these teams on some different defensive schemes to deploy to slow her down. And so there's no doubt that that these Big 12 coaches will go and see what was done when Gabby Gregory, you know, had a game where she didn't have, you know, double digits. You know, what was done to slow her down. West Virginia is not a good example because she just scored 26 points in that game and had a very Gabby Gregory type game, but she didn't reach double digits there in the I believe the Iowa State game. So you know, what was done defensively that led to K-State only having 56 points, to only having one player in double digits, and how can that be replicated? Can it be replicated? Or is maybe just a bad matchup for K-State? So that's absolutely something that's going to be looked at by a lot of teams, and K-State needs to be able to make adjustments to the adjustments. And that is why at the beginning of the season, Eddie, I said that this was going to be, in my opinion, arguably the most challenging coaching job for Jeff Mitty in his time at K-State. Not because this is the least talented team that he's had. He has had teams not as talented.
Yeah.
When he was at K-State. I saw them. I saw a couple of them. The key is you're just completely having to revamp and rehaul a bunch of what you do because your superstar is just gone, right? And so, you know, you got to do that. Big 12 teams don't know what you're going to do. They see what you're going to do. They adjust. And you got to be able to adjust their adjustments. And there is so much of that he has to do this year. Again, it's a challenging it's a challenging task, but you know that comes with territory. So we'll see what Jeff Mitty can do to dial things up for K-State to get a little more consistent offensively. Maybe get them some easier buckets. Maybe start a little quicker, finish a little quicker, and then on the flip side of that, what can K-State do to be more consistent defensively? You know, that they're really good defensively against Iowa State, weren't so great defensively against West Virginia. What can you do to be more consistent on that side of the ball? Granted, and we'll talk about this with the men's team, a lot of it is dictated by the pace of the game, right? You know, how many shots are you getting up? Are teams getting up? How many possessions are there in a game? That obviously is going to dictate a game. So you can give up 80 points, hypothetically, and have a good defensive game, and then maybe you have another game where you give 65 points, but you weren't as good defensively. I mean, that can happen depending on the pace of the game, but K-State just needs to be a little more consistent, really, on both ends of the ball, and Teams are going to make adjustments to try to slow K-State down, and, you know, it's Jeff Petty's job to be able to counter those and get his best players good looks and for K-State to be sound on the defensive as well.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden.
K-State women's basketball, Jeff Mitty's crew now will look to get a big win at home against Texas Tech on Saturday afternoon at 4 Central Time, a little bit after 4, tip-off time in Bramlage. So if you're around this weekend in Manhattan, definitely show your support for the women's team right now as they try to battle back once again from another road, a Big 12 conference loss, this time to 15-ranked Iowa State there on last night's recording this on January 12, 2023 on this Thursday evening. Flipping the coin to men's basketball, and the K-State Wildcats get ready for their showdown on the road once again with our friends against TCU on Saturday afternoon.
Been all over this podcast.
Yep, they've been all over this podcast. Oh yeah, definitely, for sure. So, and we're going to talk about them some more here. K-State, 11th ranked coming into this week, finally, after being not ranked the week prior to that. So, but the finally, they burst onto the top 25 scene and land just one spot outside the top 10. I can even take it a step further. Why are we ranked behind Texas when we beat Texas? I don't know. I have no idea. That was... See, I can complain
satisfied.
About that.
You're never satisfied. You're always wanting more.
Yes, I want more. I speak for the fans. I am for the fans for this podcast. And yeah, that just stuck out to me. But hey, I'm happy that we're ranked. But I want more. I want more. we just creamed Texas. So, but anyways, trying not to go down that rabbit hole. TCU's coming off of a loss the other night as well. So, but overall,
Texas team.
Yep, uh-huh, yep, yes they did. So, coming in, TCU is 2-2 in conference play, and they're sitting fifth right now. So, really, the top five, you got KU, K-State, Iowa State, all knotted up at 4-0. Texas Longhorns sit 3-1, TCU 2-2, and then the other half of the conference, Baylor, OU, Oklahoma State, all 1-3. Then the other two, Red Raiders of Texas Tech, in West Virginia. Who would have had this? West Virginia, 0-4, start the season.
Yeah.
Red Raiders 0-4, and the Mountaineers got beat by Baylor yesterday.
Yep.
So, woof. That's tough.
Baseball's insane.
Yes, it is.
It's just insane.
No easy game. There's just no easy game. We say it over and over in this podcast. It's no easy game at all. And for K-State, it'll be no easy game going on the road. Obviously, all the talk of the town is about, speaking of Texas, they're wanting Jerome Tang and all this other stuff, and then I have a rant to get off of here about, it's not about the whole Texas thing. It's about, it's about the crowd. It is about the crowd.
Okay. I have thoughts too.
It's about the crowd.
I'm curious what you think.
All right, we'll start right here. So, I have an excuse because I was broadcasting Flint Hills games on Tuesday night, when the same night as K-State played Oklahoma State, right? So, I have the game on ESPN Gamecast kind of to the right of me while calling the boys' basketball game. So, after the game, I go on Twitter, look at the feed, and mostly the feed says crowd ain't loud enough. Crowd ain't into it. Sold out house. Where's the crowd at? Look. I go back to what I said a couple months ago on this podcast. It actually goes back to the Wichita State game or one of the earlier games at home or whatever, but the crowd not being fully invested in the game. If you're going to go to the damn game, have your attention. I know everyone has their phones and whatnot, and fine, whatever, but if you're going to go to the game, be focused on the game. And yes, why do we have to wait until The big alley-oop, which was sick, by the way. Keontae Johnson and Marquise Noel connection brought the house down for sure. Well, we have to wait to that to get all riled up. And it does actually go back to Wichita State, because I kind of commented on it on the postcast. The crowd not vested in the game until like the last 5 minutes of the game, where we're trailing the most of the game, and then all of a sudden the Desi Steels block from behind, the crowd gets fired up. Why we do have to wait until something big late happens where we're trailing, all of a sudden we get all hyped up and riled up? We shouldn't have to wait to do that. I mean, these guys are 15-1 now. We should be very hyped for this. And I'm not trying to raise up the expectations, but look, they're 15-1. They've done their part. Jerome Tang has been on this fan base from day one since he stepped here in Manhattan. He's gone up against K-State and knows how loud it gets. And so he's been on the community, on K-State, since day one. And just to see that, it's kind of concerning. I'm not going to panic about it, but it's a little concerning that this has been the pattern with these games and the crowd being full, which, again, shout out K-State Nation for showing up, but where's the noise at? Where's the noise from start to finish? Back in the old day, again, I'm dating myself, but when I first landed to... When I first came on to K-State, when I went to my first K-State basketball game, when Frank Martin was head coach here, that atmosphere was rocking from opening tip, and especially when K-State went on runs. That place, it goes on to another level.
Place was jumping.
Absolutely. And we all know, Alex, about the whole KU-K-State rivalry, especially in Bramlage. That place... It gets dialed up even more.
Different level.
Different level, and we're going to see that on next Tuesday, right? And we'll record a show before then as well, getting ready for that particular game, which is set up to be a monstrous game if K-State can take care of TCU on Saturday. But the point being is, guys, what are we doing? What are we doing that we need something better? We need to be trailing to make noise. I mean, come on now. This has to stop. And we're coming. I think we're close to halfway through the regular season, and that it's just alarming to me that a lot of these tweets that I'm catching saying that the crowd not invested. You know, this is not the Octagon of Doom. We have a full house, and this is not the Doom that we know. So, very, very little concerning. Little concerning, Alex. Little concerning.
You know, I will say this, Eddie. Don't think that will be an issue on Tuesday. I think that the police will be going absolutely bananas on Tuesday against KU. Just going to be insanely rowdy. Now, will K-State have a shot in that game? That's the different discussion. That will be over next week. But the crowd, I don't think there's much debating how that crowd will be there. But in regards to Oklahoma State, Eddie, I have seen similar remarks on Twitter, and with what you said, 100%. Agree 100% with it. Look, you're at the game. Be a fan. Look, you don't need to be obnoxious, right? You know, you don't need to be just, you know, annoying the hell out of your section. I mean, you can cheer in a respectful way and be into the game in a respectful way without being obnoxious out there. And, you know, it doesn't need to be like, you know, you're watching, you're not in Augusta watching the Masters, you know? I mean, you're in a basketball game, you know? So, like, look, I watched the game, Eddie. I think it's fair to say, look, it was a great – first off, kudos to K-State for showing up, as you mentioned.
That was
something that the coaching staff challenged the fans. They've challenged them. We've done our part, now you show up. And they did. They did. So kudos to them for that. A huge, huge kudos for that. Selling that game out was great stuff. Great stuff. Watching the game on TV, it did not seem like, and again, it wasn't there. You know, only can say this from my from my couch and from the view there, but it did not seem like that was necessarily your old Octagon of Doom crowd until the second half when the play really began to get dialed up. I remember watching those K-State games with Frank Martin, with Jacob Pullen, that was a different level, Eddie. That was a different dial.
Yeah, definitely. On
a different dial. Hell, when I was there, Eddie, it was on a different dial. And that was with the end of Frank Martin and then the beginning of Bruce Weber. So, you know, that is something that that is there, and that, you know, fans need to bring it. And I'm with you 100% on that. You know, for me, I don't really have a rant about the crowd, but I will say this. And I think that the coaching staff, and I will say this, I have no problem with the coaching staff trying to drum up the fan interest, and acknowledge this, but I think that something that they need to remember is you're coming off of two or three of your worst basketball seasons in a really long time. Fan interest really was an all-time low. And what, as far as I can remember, since Jim Aldridge days, and you know, fans were not in a good place. I mean, fans were not in a good place when Bruce left and Jerome Tang took over. And you know, you have got to look. It's tough, Eddie. It is tough for K-State fans to show up to games consistently when you look at the location, and you look at the times, and you look at the days that they are. Particularly weeknight games and things of that nature. And, you know, especially in this day and age with how much things cost, people are, you know, being more careful with how they're spending. I mean, that's just a reality of the world right now. And the fact is you've got to give them, give them something, I think, that's worth their while of traveling to Manhattan and possibly taking time off of work to get there, to spend money on a game and to go and to support a team. Like, it's a thing. And, like, for some families, like, that is a legit thing.
Yeah.
And so I 100% understand wanting to drum up the fan, you know, the fan momentum and being a little bit disappointed in the crowd at tennis so far. But I just think it's important to remind people, and again, not saying anything wrong with what the coaching staff's done and some of the fans have done. Hell, we do it on the podcast saying show up. That's not, you know, we're not against that at all. But I think the coaching staff just needs to remember, K-State basketball wasn't a great place. They were not where football was. You know, they see those football crowds, and they're like, oh my gosh, we can get that. No, the football program was in a different place. No offense to the basketball program, but the football program was in a different place coming into the season than the basketball program was. And they needed to earn it. And I don't mean to feel like an ass, but it needed to be proven that it was a different product than the court. I think we were all optimistic that it would be. But you had to get the fan interest back. That was part of this job. And undertaking this job is getting fans back invested in basketball. And they did that. And now they're trying to get fans in the seats. But I think it's just important to remember, like, that's a thing. And you can say, you know, we want to sell it Tuesday. And that was great that they did. That's a 6 p.m. game on a Tuesday. You know what I mean? And that's tough on a lot of people who go to K-State basketball games, who maybe have season tickets. I mean, again, you're talking about people who commute 2+ hours to go to games. You know, if you got a game at 6 o'clock, that requires taking off work, maybe getting someone to watch the kids, you know, being able to do this, and then, you know, driving to the game and being there, and then, you know, being able to get back home in time to go to work the next day. Again, just comes the territory. You know, they're not Lawrence. They're not 40 minutes out of the Kansas City. So it's different. It's not Baylor, where Baylor's got, you know, suburbs around where it can be quicker to get to games, too. So it's just different. And I just, again, not a rant, but just think it's important that people remember where this program was, that needed to be earned, that they had to get fans to buy in to what they had. And then also they just need to be realistic about the situation that, look, Saturday games, weekend games, or it's going to be different. It's going to be a different deal. And yeah, do I think that Saturday, a Saturday game, against, I think they play Texas Tech a week from Saturday at home. That game's going to be different than Oklahoma State. That place will be packed. The place will be rocking.
And also, Saturday. Yeah, and also.
Yeah, that's going to be a different deal than Oklahoma State. You know, I think that there's some fan, you know, we need to be realistic. I think, again, just kind of about the Danish crowds. If you look around college basketball, Eddie, I don't see hardly any arenas that are completely full. I don't see that. And I think that that's just something that people should keep in mind. But I will say, you should show up to games. You should absolutely show up to games. You should pack Bramblers. This coaching staff has deserved, has Jerome Tang said it. We did our part. It's time for you all to do yours. He's right. They did do their part. It is our turn as K-State fans to show that support back to them. K-State fans did do it. They showed up on Tuesday. They sold the place out. They sold six games out already here coming up. And I have a feeling, Eddie, that they'll probably end up selling every game out from here on out. And so the next step is what you said, Eddie. Be loud if you're at the game. You paid the money. You made the drive. You may as well make it the best damn home court in the Big 12. You may as well do it. So just do it. We don't know gentlemen's claps are needed. You know, we can go out, cheer. Cheer like at the Keontae alley-oop every play. You know, make that place tough because that's a thing. Like, home court in basketball is a thing. It's not like football. It's not like baseball. It is a different animal in college basketball. It makes it tough, man. It makes life on the opponent really, really difficult. And it's a tool, and I think it's why Jerome Tang's so passionate about it.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden.
And you're on the lines of what John Kurtz said on Three Mod Pod, on the latest edition of Three Mod Pod. That came out earlier this week as well. He lives in Kansas City, so obviously he couldn't come to the game, but he was on that same front lines as well. You know, it's difficult to get to the games, things like that. Yeah. And let's just throw in the fact that a lot of the students still are on their break still as well.
Oh, yeah, they're still on break. So, yeah, I might still be out here if I was a student. Yeah,
right. Yeah, so by next week when we record our next podcast before the KU game, the students will be back, and we already said they're going to be in full force for the KU game as well. So I don't need to say anything more than that. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I'm in a situation. Even if I didn't broadcast the Fort Hills games, I wasn't going to be able to go because it was at 6 o'clock.
Because you're a bad fan, Eddie. You're a bad fan. How dare you?
Not trying to backtrack anything. Just saying.
You're a bad fan, Eddie. It's your life.
Hey, if I do have tickets to the Florida game, so there's
good. That game sold out too.
Yep, that game.
Good job, K-State, for selling Florida out.
Yep, that game just got sold out.
I knew you'd be at the Florida game. You got to go to Florida. You're from Florida. You got to go to the Florida game.
Yep. Well, I'm originally from Georgia, but I lived in Florida most of my life.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Well, South.
Yep. I gotta go. But yeah. You bring up the same points that Kurtz brought up as well. So, with the travel and everything else, and yeah, the latter part of the Bruce Weber era was some of the worst basketball that we've seen, and the fans were driven out. They were not invested in that brand of basketball, and shouldn't be invested in that.
No.
So
that was bad basketball.
That was terrible basketball. Yeah. Since the Pearl Project podcast started, we had to witness that. So
that's
now,
that's all we knew before
Jerome Tang and a whole new staff comes into play, and obviously, and another thing here. John Kurtz also said that I agree with that as well. Jerome Tang and the staff have every right to do what they've been doing. Continue the campaign for the fans. Now, if they were losing, that's maybe a whole different story.
That's like Bruce begging fans, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be a whole different story, boy. But right now, K-State men's basketball is trending back up in the right direction, and they should continue. I'm all for it, what they do. And yeah, and when the students come back, it'll be a whole other different story there. With the weekday games, with the 6 o'clock games and whatnot, yeah, it's a little harder. But from then on, if it's like a 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock game, that shouldn't be no issue. And with the students coming back, that shouldn't be an issue. I don't see that being an issue for the rest of the way, especially if this team, led to Keontae Johnson, Marquise Noel, continue to play well. They continue this direction. Now, again, they're going to run into some hurdles. Again, we're not saying they're going to keep playing like this. Now, again.
No.
Now, again, if they do, then damn. But they're going to run into some trouble.
Holy bleep if they do.
Yeah, they're going to be in a whole other conversation if they continue to play like win games like this. But, again, the Big 12, it's a dogfight every night. And they got to go on the road. Before KU, they got to go on the road and play our friends down at TCU. 13-3 coming into this matchup. And they are 2-2 now. What time was the game? I had it here before I switched.
I believe it is at 1 p.m.
Yes, it is. Yep.
Time.
1 p.m.
Pacific time.
Wow. So you're going to get a good time right there.
Yes, I'm not getting a 9 a.m.
No, not the lame.
It is great.
Yeah, like, not the lame ass 9 a.m. wake up.
There's
wake up
like
call.
Waking up and drinking a cup of coffee and watching a football or basketball game.
Yeah. So
It's become my life on the West Coast.
1 o'clock indeed. 1 o'clock game. So. We'll see how K-State responds. Now, again, hopefully to get Kasan back. I don't know the report status is on him on that. They're going to need him down the stretch at some point there as well. But the TCU, that's not going to be a gimme, obviously. TCU is ranked 17th right now. But this is an opportunity for K-State again to make one of those statements to get another top 20 opponent on their resume here. But no doubt, this is going to be a tough game. TCU, you knew it from the start of from when you looked at the schedule from the start of the season that TCU was going to be one of those teams going to be right up in the mix, top half of the league.
Oh, yeah.
So obviously the Oklahoma State game. I'll get your thoughts quickly on the Oklahoma State game and what do you expect K-State? What are your thoughts on what K-State should expect against TCU early Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, well, final crowd thought.
Uh-oh.
Just want to remind people that you mentioned the students aren't back. A good chunk of those students' seats were not students. So that very well could have also been part of the audio issue or the lack of noise in the crowd. So let's see once we actually have students fill the whole GA section what that sounds like. But and I agree with everything else you said. Spot on. I think we're in line with that. Going basketball quickly with Oklahoma State, Eddie. I think my takeaway from that game was okay. K-State can win different ways. We saw them win against West Virginia in a game that was 82-76. It was a game that K-State literally. We talked about this a couple pods ago. Could not have played any worse in the first half. I mean, that was just a horrible half basketball. But they really dialed it in there in the second half and played much, much better and put themselves in a position to win and did win. But then you go on the road, right, in your Texas swing, and you score 116 points. You win 116-103. Then you go to Baylor and you win, what is it, 90? I don't have a score in front of me. 90 is 97-95 or something like that. And then you're feeling great, right? You're feeling great because you got these wins and you're putting up all these points, but your defense just gave up like, what, 103 and then 95? And you're just like, well, you know, we score all these points, but we just gave up a crap ton of points. So what does this mean for K-State? They come back. They play a game against Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State plays, I think, the slowest pace in the Big 12. But they also have the number one defense in the Big 12, I believe, statistically, too. And so it was a game that was a slower-paced game with fewer possessions. They were more physical than anyone had been with K-State in the paint. And they really threw something at K-State that they hadn't seen this year. And K-State was able to weather it. Had their lumps early in the first half, and they were down at halftime, but they did outscore Oklahoma State by 10 in the second half, and they were able to make some adjustments get some stops and then find a way to get some scores. And so I really liked the fact that, you know, K-State, again, they found a way to win a game in a different way. And they found a way to win a game when their offense didn't have it going. You know, that wasn't their best. You know, the offense was just so, it was so free-flowing in those games against Texas and Baylor. And it was anything but free-flowing against Oklahoma State. They just could not get looks. Oklahoma State played great defensively. K-State couldn't get looks. They struggled. It wasn't that K-State was not executing necessarily on offense. You know, they were trying to move the ball. They were trying to, you know, play their game. But it was tough. You know, Oklahoma State muddies things up, and K-State was able to find ways to eventually crack it. I continue to be worried about the rebounding situation. K-State seems to they're struggling with rebounding. And I also continue to worry about the depth issues, because K-State's only 8 deep right now, and you're relying a ton on minutes from Keontae and Marquise, but you found a way to win a tough, gritty, physical basketball game against a really, you look at the record and you see 9-7, you think, yeah. But they're much better than the record of Oklahoma State, and they are a team that's going to give a lot of teams headaches this year. They about beat KU and Al Fieldhouse, you know, and they did beat Oklahoma. I believe it was Oklahoma that they beat, and then they've given, you know, they gave Texas, they held Texas to 56 points. You know, they held Texas to 56 points, and that was K-State. That was a team that K-State let score 103. That was a team that TCU let score, I think it was in the 80s last night. Again, I don't have the score up front of me. It was 70s or 80s. So Texas has got great, great scores, and they held them to 56 points. Good team defensively. K-State found a way to get that win. And look, Eddie, going into the game, K-State was only favored by 5. But there was a reason that they were only favored by 5. Oklahoma State's a good team, and that's life in the Big 12. So that's my takeaway from that game. Was happy with the end result. Happy the K-State found a way to get that. Going into the TCU game, Eddie, this is going to be, I think, more along the lines of the Texas and Baylor game. TCU plays fast. They like to play with tempo. They got scores. And what does K-State like to do? I think we're learning this, which I would have never guessed, Eddie, never before the season began, guessed that this is how K-State would have liked to play. But K-State, what did they like to play fast? They like tempo. They like to get up a lot of shots. And I think you're going to see on Saturday, Eddie, two teams flying up and down the court, getting a ton of shots up, and you're going to see a high-scoring affair. That's what I think. I really do. And, score a game in the 70s or 80s. I don't know if we'll see something in the 90s or 100s again, but I think the 70s, 80s is realistic. And so that's what I expect, Eddie. I really do. And TCU, they're a good, really good team. They return pretty much everyone from last year. And then they got Mike Miles, who was preseason Big 12 Player of the Year. He's a beast. I don't know how to say it. The dude's a beast. The dude can ball. He can score from anywhere on the court. He can get to the free throw line. When he gets to the line, he makes shots. And TCU just got a lot of shot makers. They just got a lot of shot makers. So, again, they're nothing like Oklahoma State, who you just played. I think that they're a lot more comparable to Texas and Baylor. And I think it's just going to be a tight game. It's going to come down to the wire. But K-State's going to have to make shots, Eddie. I mean, that's I think, the biggest thing. They're going to have to make shots. You know, at TCU, they're a tough team. They're a tough team, and they're a tough out. But if there is a benefit or a pro, is K-State's played pretty well in the past down there in Fort Worth. And again, you know, not that any of this carries over year to year. It doesn't. But K-State's had success when they go down to Fort Worth. And so it's a place they can win. They've done it before. TCU's not the home court advantage that, KU is or Texas Tech is or heck, you know, Texas. I mean, man, the place is rocking down the Moody Center the way they got it right now. You know, you're not walking into that type of environment. And even if you were, Eddie, this team has been in so many different environments and scenarios now. I don't really think there's a lot that would shake them. So go down there, Eddie, play your best game. You mentioned Gasan. If they need him, I don't know what exactly the status is of that injury, but you're right, Eddie. They need him back. And the fact they're doing this without Gasan is just wild. It's just wild to me. Because he's your big man who can run the floor, right? He can run the floor and stretch those defenses. That's not necessarily Bebe's game, but they're still doing it with Bebe. So if you can get Gasan back, golly, that would help you. It gives you another body for depth. It gives you someone who fits into with what you're doing right now offensively. That would be a great thing. But Eddie, I can't end it though without mentioning Marquise Noel. I mean, what the hell there's to say? I don't know. I don't know what to say. You know, he's playing on a, you know, he's Steph Curry. Okay, K-State's got Steph Curry. Eddie, that's what's going on right now. That's what's going on. No, they do not have Steph Curry. Be sure to take some shots like Damian Lillard though. My guy in Portland, he definitely takes some logo Lillard threes. He's definitely taking a few of those. He's playing great though. I mentioned in the last podcast, Eddie, he's playing with so much control, so much more control. And then Jerome Tang used that great analogy of putting the tracks under him, right? We got this train. This is a big piece of equipment, and it's a big, powerful piece of equipment. But if you put it on sand, it's not going to go anywhere. You need to give it tracks so you can actually guide it, guide it to where it needs to go. And now he's got tracks. They've put tracks under him. And you're seeing what he's doing with that. The passing, the shooting, the vision. It's all there. All there. And it's just, as a K-State fan, it's super exciting. And I think the more exciting thing is he's got more room to grow. You know, he can continue to grow. And then I love how Jerome Tang also talks about giving him that comparing the lion and the tiger, and teaching Marquise, when he needs to be a lion compared to when he needs to be a tiger, and being a tiger, carrying the team but distributing it to others, having others help out, and then flipping that switch to being a lion and going out and eating your prey. Or I can't remember what the hell he said, but something along those lines. And Marquise just embodies it. So you need that to continue. You need that to continue, because while K-State is scoring the ball a lot, a good chunk of it is coming from Marquise and Keontae. And I don't think the Keontae play is going to drop off. I think he's going to do what he does. That I'm not as worried about. Marquise, I'm wondering if he's going to come down from this high. I'm wondering that. It's not an indictment of Marquise. It's just, we've seen it from Keontae. We know what Keontae is. That dude's a first-round NBA draft pick. He's a beast. He's a man amongst boys. He can get to the hoop. He can do a bunch of stuff. We knew that. We know that. But Marquise is still kind of new. And it's like, can you keep doing that? Like, can you keep hitting logo Lillard threes? Can you keep putting up 35 and 13 or just some insane lines? And maybe he can, Eddie. Maybe he can. If he can, we're going to be having a different conversation about this season. I can tell you that right now. But I'm just curious to continue to watch Marquise Noel and see if he can actually keep up this level of play. Or if maybe someone else pops that. Maybe Desi Stills gets going. Maybe it's Cam Carter who gets going or someone like that. But I'm eager to see what happens. And again, TCU, I think that it's gonna be a lot of points.
Episode 140 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition. Eddie Greer here in Manhattan, Kansas. Co-host Alex Aiden living out there in San Diego, California, and Marquise Noel. For K-State, we can't need him to drop. We need him to stay right where he is, maybe even a 75% Marquise Noel. Not all the way down, but obviously you're gonna have games you're gonna have the 20 plus game, the 30 point games, but you're gonna have sometimes the not so good shooting games, and that's where a Cam Carter needs to step up.
100%.
I was thinking of Ish. Ish needs to continue to improve and get better.
Ish has been great, too. Yeah. Kudos to Ish.
Yep.
Kudos to Ish.
Yes, yep. Sir. Yep, yep, yep. So, really intriguing matchup here. Mike Miles Jr. of TCU. And then I was looking at Emmanuel Miller as well for TCU. Led them in scoring against Texas. So, a lot of good athletes on the floor.
Emmanuel Miller is a good shooter.
Yeah. He is. Yes, he is. So, a lot of good athletes on the floor for this game. Another top 20 matchup for K-State, 17th-ranked Horned Frogs, early Saturday afternoon, 1 Central Time, or if you're living out west, 11 Pacific, or you living...
Yeah, that's right.
...in Eastern Time, Xander Zone, that would be 2 o'clock. Yep, that would be 2 o'clock as well. So, definitely a big game for K-State, we'll see. And obviously, and just to throw this in here real quick before we quickly go close this podcast out with football here, and they're not overlooking TCU. That's what KU looming in the wings in Bramlage Tuesday night. Jerome Tang's all eyes on TCU on Saturday. So take care of business first. Handle your business. And then we'll see what happens. What domino falls. And then get ready for to invite your next-door neighbors from out east. So intriguing stretch of games coming up.
100%, very intriguing, because you mentioned, you got TCU, you got KU, you're going to come home against Tech, but then you go back on the road, and I can't remember, you go back on the road to Iowa State, who's 4-0. Like, it gets no easier, and literally, TCU, KU, 17-2, they're 17th ranked, 2nd ranked. You get Tech at home, which you should win that game. But then you go on the road against Iowa State, and it's just like, good grief, man. You never can breathe. And then you get Florida, right, which is great, Florida, good, solid team, but a game K-State should win, playing where they're playing right now. But then coming out of Florida, you got KU, Texas, and TCU again. And it's just like, holy sheesh, man. Like, it never lets up, Eddie. It never lets up. And it's just insane. And honestly, I think we talked about this beginning season. Maybe they'll be able to breathe a little bit in February when they go on the road to Texas Tech and on the road to Oklahoma, and they go on the road against Oklahoma State. Like, these are road games. On the road to West Virginia. Like, hey, yeah, you're playing some teams that are winnable, but you're going on the road for all these games. And, you do get Oklahoma at home. But, I mean, you still got Baylor at home, which, they're a top 25 team. It is what it is. They're not ranked in the top 25 right now. They'll be back. Iowa State at home. I mean, it never lets up, man. It just never lets up. And so, that's the beauty of the Big 12. And you mentioned they're not going to keep winning. They're not. They're going to lose games, guys. The schedule is way too difficult. Way too difficult. In fact, I feel like they're due. I feel like they're due for one, and I'm kind of leaning that TCU will get this one because they've gotten a nail biter against Texas, they've gotten a nail biter against Baylor, and it's like, hey, it's great to win these games, but these are like coin flip games, and eventually, what goes up must come down. Things typically kind of even out, and TCU just lost a heartbreaker to Texas. So I mean, that's gonna be a tough one. But you know what? If you beat TCU. That sets up quite the game against KU. I mean, you're talking about a game where K-State will definitely move into the top 10 if they beat TCU.
And that'll be an opportunity to if Iowa State somehow loses their game, it possibly set a potential for who gets the lead in the Big 12 conference.
You're right. That's a great point. If K-State and KU both win, which are huge ifs, because they literally play number 14 Iowa State, number 17 TCU. But if they both do win, somehow find a way to win those two games, you've gotten a top 10 matchup between arch rivals and the last two unbeaten teams in the Big 12. They would both be 16-1 at that point. I mean, that would just... When's the last time you had a K-State-KU game like that? Probably would have been back in 2000. Probably when Game Day was there. Back in 2010. I think it was 2010 when Game Day was there, right? It was either maybe late 8. So 12 years, 13 years since you've had it, those types of stakes tied to that game. And you can actually make an argument that this game would have more stakes on it, because I think K-State was ranked 13th in that game, too. So, it would be wild. It would be massive. And look, this KU team, again, we'll talk about this more next week. Heck, this KU team is freaking good, man. Like, they're freaking good. I'm sorry, they just aren't. But, you know, if you're K-State, you just got to put yourself in a position, Eddie. We talked about that all year. Just got to put yourself in a position and just, you know, see what happens. So, and the final thing I want to say with Marquise, I want to echo what you said. Marquise is playing at such a high level. Like, you can't expect him to score 30-plus every game. That's just not realistic. But if you can get, like you said, if you can get 75% of what Marquise has been while he's been on his scorcher, you take it. Like, you're happy with that. If you can get consistently, you know, Marquise averaging, you know, 20-plus points a game in Big 12 play, that's a huge deal. Like, that is a huge deal. You know, yeah, it may not be Marquise going for 35 and 13 or something like that, but if you're getting Marquise averaging 20 points a game, 19 points a game, something like that, then you're putting yourself in a really good position. You pair that with what Keontae Johnson's doing. You're in a great spot. So, if you can get 75% of Marquise Noel, and that's like what he is as a baseline, with the possibility of getting hot, that puts K-State in a fantastic position. And I still think, Eddie, I still think that Desi Sills has got more in store offensively. He can shoot, he can score, and I just feel like his moment's coming. I don't know what it is. I feel like K-State's going to need another score. It's going to have to happen at some point. I just kind of feel like Desi Sills is the guy. He's a veteran. He's been there. He's played in big games. And he knows how to score the basketball. The dude can shoot. The dude can score. I just feel like his moment's coming. I don't know when. But I feel like his moment's coming. I really do. So, but somebody's going to have to up their game, because K-State, again, well, as great as this is, if you lose Marquise, if you lose Keontae, you lose a huge chunk of your offense, and that puts K-State in a big position. So they do need to get a little bit more balanced scoring. But look, I'm not going to complain, Eddie. K-State went 14-17 last year in Big 12 in basketball. They're 15-1 right now and ranked 11th in the country. Who am I to complain about, well, the offense isn't quite balanced enough? No. I'm ecstatic. I'm through the roof. I'm happy as a clam. Keep doing your thing, Jerome Tang and K-State and company.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Find it wherever you get your podcast, the Purple Project Podcast. If you're new to the show, welcome on board. Glad you're with us for the Purple Project Podcast. If you have not subscribed to this podcast, what are you waiting for? The Purple Project Podcast, all things K-State. And speaking of all things K-State, looking at the week ahead, of course, we'll be back early next week before the KU game. So we will have another recording of the weekly edition before that KU game. And we'll have reaction to whatever goes down at Fort Worth against TCU this weekend. And, of course, we'll talk women's basketball, big game when Tech comes to town. Track and field, as we're sitting here recording this podcast late on this Thursday, January 12th. We'll kick off their indoor season tomorrow for the KU-K State Wichita State Triangular. So the track and field get their season started, indoor anyways. And then, of course, tomorrow, men's basketball kicks off a doubleheader for basketball all the way around against TCU. Well covered that. Women at home here in Bramlage, here in Manhattan, against Texas Tech. And then, of course, the Sunflower Showdown. It could get even bigger, depending on the results of these games coming up in the Big 12. KU comes to town Tuesday night, and we talked about 6 p.m. but I think it should be no problem here for the exception. We'll leave this as an exception right here against our heater rival KU. And then women's basketball, they go on the road. Yeah, they go on the road. Yes, they go on the road to play Baylor. That is going to be a hard, tough game. Baylor, I believe, is ranked in the top 10. I know I saw it, the ranking tonight. I don't exactly remember, but I know they're right there in the top 10 as well.
Usually so, it's a fair bet with Baylor women's basketball.
Yeah. So We'll see what happens throughout the rest into the middle of the next week for K-State Athletics here in Manhattan, Kansas. Now just getting away from the hard floor of basketball in this podcast real quick. I know me and Alex talked about it a little bit before we hit the record button here, but Treshawn Ward, according to a lot of the transfer portal wrinkles, was the number one running back in the transfer portal. K-State hits another home run in the transfer portal as far as offense concerns there. Look, obviously, to continue that conversation, yeah, Deuce Vaughn, yeah, he's going to be in the Ring of Honor. Definitely should be there in the future, in my opinion there. But they get it. K-State, once again, feels a need that they needed badly, and Treshawn Ward, feels that void. Look, any play against Oklahoma in the Cheez-It Bowl and had a good game against them. So Oklahoma's not going to be off the snide. Deuce Vaughn, brief side of the leaf, you ain't going to get no breaks. We're going to come at you with another back that has success against you, and that is Treshawn Ward there. Originally, he went to school at Florida State this past year and had a good season, actually. Over 600 yards rushing, and I can't remember how many touchdowns exactly, but that's another offense.
Seven, Eddie.
Seven, okay. This is another weapon from the transfer portal. Remember, we got Keegan Johnson a couple months ago to add on to the depth there that you're going to lose. Well, we already lost Knowles, and then Alex brought up, I believe, Phillip Brooks coming back, made that announcement.
Huge.
That's a big.
That's enormous. That's kind of flying under the radar, but yeah, that's big.
That is big, and now you're looking at an offense, Alex. Again, this is going to be further down the road, but obviously, if you're looking at spring ball and going into 2023, this offense is taking into shape. You got the whole offensive line coming back. We kind of already knew that with the rumors surrounding, and now you got at least you get one of the big three. Cooper Beebe's back. Felix declares.
Another huge one.
Yep. Cooper, that's huge. Felix declares. Like, we kind of saw that coming there when Deuce made his decision to forgo his senior season and make his presence known in the NFL draft. Felix today also writing a letter to the K-State Nation and saying his goodbyes, and he is going to take his talents to the NFL draft there as well. So at least you get 33% of the big three there as well. And I'm sure it'll be a discussion for another podcast, the D-line. Definitely some holes to fill there, but just focusing for right now on the offensive side of the ball, Alex, with this Ward get for K-State. This offense that at one point, probably before this past year, thought that we're going to be in rebuilding mode, looking pretty good right now.
Yeah, look, Eddie, I don't think they're going to be in rebuilding mode next year. That's what I thought initially was going to be the situation. I think rebuilding mode is gone. I think reloading mode is now in place.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
They're going to be a top 25 team next year. I really believe that. Are they going to be as good as this year's team? I don't think so, because they've got a lot of holes on D, which you mentioned, but they've got some players on D. They got a good recruiting class. You never know who's going to pop out. They've still got more time to work in the portal. And offensively, they're looking pretty damn good. So, you know, you mentioned the offense. The whole offensive line coming back is huge. Can't say it enough. And it's not just whole offensive line. Your top eight linemen, not just your top five, your top eight are coming back. So it's you've got depth at line two. And that's enormous, because that means you can absorb, you know, the injuries that are going to come. They come with playing on the offensive line. And so you've got that. And I was already feeling pretty good about the running back situation with the whole offensive line coming back, with what we saw from DJ Giddens this year, from Joe Jackson. Really like Joe Jackson coming into this to this K-State offense. I feel like he's someone who can contribute early. And I knew they'd land someone else, but I was feeling pretty good with where they were at. And then when Treshawn Ward came free, I saw it, but I didn't think anything of it, because I just assumed that would even be in K-State's wheelhouse. And then the whole K-State just gets it like that. half a finger. And so that was just enormous, enormous. And he rushed for, was it 600-some yards this year, 7 touchdowns. And Florida State, he rushed for over 1,200 yards, I believe, if you combine his last 2 seasons. He's going to have, like, 2 years, I think 2 years of eligibility, or at least 2 years of eligibility. So,
I think that's right.
He is he's a guy that is going to be huge for them, huge for them. And so they're set at running back, Eddie, with the line, with those guys. They're in a really good spot there. You're losing Deuce, and you obviously can't replace Deuce. There's no doubt about that. But I'm still really comfortable with where they're at running back. This went as well as it could have gone, losing Deuce. Yes, you lost Deuce, but you get all those linemen back. You get who might be the best transfer running back in all of college football this year. And, you know, part of the reason why you get, I think, a Treshawn Ward, Eddie, it's because of the success of Deuce Vaughn. That's fresh in the minds. Players see that. They see what he's done. They know what Darren Sproles has done. They know what some of these backs have done in K-State systems, and that's appealing. I think that makes it appealing for him. So you get a guy like Treshawn Ward. And then we talked about Keegan Johnson, right?
Mm-hmm.
You bring him in, and we know that he's going to be part of this offense. He was one of the top receiving transfer options. K-State's able to snag him up. You've got Phillip Brooks coming back now, and you've got R.J. Garcia coming back, which there's a lot of hype on him, and then there's a lot of hype around the Ole Miss transfer from last year. Is it Jaden Jackson? Was that his name? Is that right?
Yes, Jaden Jackson.
Jaden Jackson, as I thought. Yeah, so you got Jaden Jackson, who I think is going to have an increased role, and then you've got really good young receivers coming in. You've got Sterling Lockett in his second year. We've got Trey Spivey coming in. You got Andre Davis from Kansas City, and who knows who will pop in the group of receivers coming in. So you're sitting at a really good spot at receiver, and then you go to tight end, and you got who might be the biggest weapon on this offense, Ben Sennett. Bringing Ben Sennett back another off season. He's just going to be better next year, Eddie. You give him another off season. You give him another year to work with Will Howard, and the guy is going to be tough as nails. He's going to be a go-to guy. He's going to be a huge piece of this offense. And then, oh, by the way, you're bringing Will Howard back after the season he had, and he's going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the Big 12. I don't think there's any debate about it. He might be the best in the Big 12 next year. We'll just have to see, but he is going to be a handful. And K-State offense is going to be a handful. And I'm excited for it, Eddie. I'm here for it.
Yeah.
You mentioned it. There's questions on the defense. What are you going to do defensive line? How are you going to replace Eli Huggins? How are you going to replace Felix? How are you going to replace some of the linebackers? These are questions. These are legitimate questions. But, you know, K-State does have Terry Kirksey, right, coming in at linebacker. That's big. Let's remember that. He's going to be a guy that's going to play immediately for K-State. Let's also not forget that at cornerback, you're losing a couple guys, but you've got Will Lee coming in. That's a huge get. I think he's going to step in day one, be a starter, and be really, really good for the Cats. And then let's not forget that they also have Marquis Siegel from North Dakota State coming in. Another guy, step in. He was a high 3-star, low 4-star transfer recruit. Going to step in. He's going to play a lot from day one. He can play safety, he can play corner, you can move him around. So K-State's got some things going on defensively. I'm feeling better about certain areas where they're at there with what they've been able to do. They've really been able to do, for the most part, Eddie, everything they've wanted to do, addressing the defense. So that is really encouraging to me. But now comes the hardest part, where you got to shore up. Really, honestly, I think for the most part, they're pretty good with around linebacker, too. So you've made some, you probably want another guy in the secondary, but outside of maybe snagging someone else in the secondary and maybe another linebacker, you're probably good on those two levels. You mentioned it. You really want to shore that defensive lineup. Can you get an edge rusher? Can you get a nose tackle? Can you replace Felix? Can you replace Eli? And honestly, maybe even a couple of each. You know, really whatever you can get. I told you, Eddie, what I think they should do. I think they will end up doing. I think you need to slide Khalid Duke up and play him at the end and pair him with Matt Lack and pair him with Mont. And then maybe try to find someone linebacker. I think it's going to be easier to find a transfer linebacker than transfer defensive end. I think that Khalid is more comfortable there. That's the other thing. I just think that that's more natural for him, and you're going to get a better Khalid Duke with him playing in that position. So I still think that that's the way to go. We'll see if that's what they do. Even if they do that, they should go try to get another defensive end. But I think the biggest thing is nose tackle. I mean, I don't know. Do they have a nose tackle right now? I don't even know if they do. So you need to go get a nose tackle. So that they absolutely have to do. So there's still some things they have to do, but Eddie, I would be surprised if we go into next year, and we will talk about this a ton in the spring, but I would be surprised going into next year if K-State was in the preseason poll, if they were any lower than second or third. I really would. I mean, maybe they'll be fourth because Oklahoma and Texas will just get their votes because they're OU and Texas, but I expect K-State to be better than both of them. I really think that, TCU is going to probably be your favorite, and I really don't know why K-State shouldn't be second behind them. I really don't, the way that things are shaping up for them. Texas Tech's looking really good next year, too, so, I mean, that could be an option. But I think that there's no reason for me to believe that with the way it's shaping out, and you got to be excited about that. You got to be excited about that because, you're finding guys that can be hopefully some instant impact players, and I think that there's some more to come.
Oh, yeah, definitely some more to come there for K-State football coming up when that time rolls around, obviously, with, of course, recruiting going on 24-7 there as well. And this 2023 team taking somewhat almost in full shape, not quite, but it's starting to look pretty good. But, yeah, a lot to talk about when that comes, especially with spring ball. Rolls around. Purple Project Podcast, episode 140 of this podcast about to come to a close here.
60 away from 200.
You're already counting down. Already counting down. 60
away. 60. Wow. That's sneaking up on us fast.
Yep. It. The countdown is, Corner Alex is on, folks. R60.
It's on.
It's on. It's on from there. And we got another one coming up on Monday, which will be out. Probably shooting for before it's KU game for sure. So, well, we are knocking these down here on the Pro Project Podcast. Alex, any last final thoughts here before we say so long going into K-State weekend?
You know what, I think that the last thing for me to K-State Nation is just enjoy it with the basketball program. Just enjoy it, soak it up. You know, it's fun, man, for basketball to be something again. I mean, it is really nice. And so, looking at standings and being like, oh, we're in a Big 12 race. Like, oh, we're actually, like, in Joe Lenardi's field of 68. Like, oh, you know, we're a 3 seed today. Like, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Like, it's been so long since that's been a thing. And so, just enjoy it. Just enjoy the way they're playing and the pub that they're getting and, look, they're going to lose games. It's going to happen. You know, don't let it get you down. You know, if they go out and they lose to TCU, it's okay. This is the Big 12. You're not going to win every game, you know. Keep your head up. Enjoy watching them. Look, they're going to go on losing streaks, Eddie. Hell, it might happen this next week. You know, they might lose to TCU. They might lose to KU. They might have a two-game losing streak. Maybe they beat them both. I don't know. But either way, enjoy it. They're well ahead of schedule. It is a joy to watch them play. It's a joy to watch them compete. Will Jerome can go to Texas or not? I don't know. I guess we'll have to listen to Eddie's. Did you see him in Daily coming on that, or am I wrong?
I don't have a Daily, not on that exactly, but it might be coming next week, maybe, if it's continuous.
Okay. Maybe I'm thinking of Trishawn. Maybe that's what
I have on. One. I have one. Okay, K-State Nation. I have one come up on Trishawn Ward. This weekend, so look out for that.
That's what I was thinking.
And a couple more that I finally got uploaded as well. So busy weekend coming up for the Purple Project Podcast.
You're busy. You're going to keep the channel going through the weekend. So clearly continue to listen for the dailies because Eddie has got you hooked up with the dailies. But my point was,
don't worry about Coach. I've seen way too much of him. Is he going to leave? Is he not? Guys, it is beginning of January. Just enjoy the basketball. Look, enjoy it. Worry about the coaching thing later, okay? Look, in part, it comes with winning. There's going to be rumors. Just enjoy it. Enjoy it. Don't stress about coaching. Don't stress about, you know, just random stuff. Enjoy the basketball. Enjoy the basketball. So it is a joy, and hopefully it'll be TCU Saturday. If they beat TCU Saturday, I mean, wow. Even if they don't, Eddie, still, wow, it'll be amazing in Franklin. But, man, if they beat TCU, oh, boy. Oh, boy, do we got something in store for Tuesday. But fun times, Eddie, fun times.
Yep. Fun times indeed. We'll see what happens on the men's side. And, of course, don't forget about the ladies as well. Jeff Mitty, Gabby Gregory, Serena Sundell, Jalen Glenn, and co. taking on Texas Tech right here in Manhattan Saturday afternoon. So as soon as the K-State men's game goes final, it should be an hour in between games. And then get ready, come here to play Texas Tech, K-State, 4 o'clock Central Time. Zone here in Manhattan, Kansas. So a big Saturday coming up for K-State basketball. Alex, quickly, I'm putting you on the spot. No analysis, nothing. We got some playoff football here before we close out. I'm going to close out with that. So no analysis, nothing. Give me your winning teams from Super Wild Card Weekend. I'm putting you on the spot. Go in order from, go in order from Seattle to San Francisco, all the way through the Monday night matchup between Dak Prescott and Tom Brady. Who you got winning these wild card games?
Okay, here we go. So, Saturday, we've got Seahawks, 49ers. I've got 49ers. Saturday night, we've got Jaguars, Chargers, I believe, is that night?
Yep.
I've got, this is going to be the closest game. This will be the closest, I guess, no analysis. Come to the closest game, I think. Give me the Jags in that one. And then Sunday, control is Bills Dolphins. There's the Bills there. Sunday evening, you've got the Sunday afternoon, actually. You've got Sunday afternoon, which is, oh, Eddie, what is this Sunday afternoon? It's an NFC game. It's a Giants Vikings. Give me the Vikings in that one in Minnesota. And then Sunday night, you've got Bengals against the Ravens. Give me the Bengals there. And then Monday night, you have got the Cowboys against the Bucks. I will take the Cowboys in that game, which will set up next week in the divisional round. Chiefs, Jags, and Bengals on the AFC side, and then on the NFC side, you will have the Eagles against the Cowboys, right? And then the 49ers against the Vikings, if I'm correct on the seating there. So that's what your division around would look like, in my scenario.
Yeah, you're pretty much, yeah, mine the same. We are both in the same camp on all those games here, except for closest game. I'm actually going to go with the closest game of the weekend, Giants, Vikings, because these two teams just played each other around Thanksgiving weekend, or it was Christmas, around Christmas weekend,
yeah, Christmas.
And it went down to the last kick, final play, kick, and Joseph nailed it like a 60-plus yard field goal to win it. So, yeah, I got the Vikings, and yeah, I definitely got the Jags. Chargers, woo! And I think Stephen A. called out Brandon Staley on his own show.
I think
being from the Southeast, my ties to Jacksonville, I would love to see Jacksonville knock off Chargers. So yeah, I definitely got them going forward, and I got a lot of friends that are Jags fans too, so I like to see them move.
And Doug Peterson is just—he's just a really good coach.
Yeah, he's a good coach. Yep.
I'm sorry, I think he can coach circles around Brandon Staley. That's just fine. I think the Chargers are more talented. I think they're the more talented team.
They're the talented team. Yeah.
I just think Doug Peterson can coach circles around Brandon Staley, and I think that he actually knows how to use his weapons a little bit better. But look, if the Chiefs win, I want the Jets to win, man. I don't want to turn for the third time. You kidding me? Hell no. Hell no, man. No. But I think the Jets face the Chargers. The Chargers, all of a sudden, the Chiefs close. But all of a sudden, such a close game. And I can't take losing to a divisional team in the playoffs. No. I rather no. Completely the Jets. I just don't want it. I don't want it.
And I'll end the podcast on this. Of course, we cannot forget about Skylar Thompson, Miami Dolphins, going to make his first playoff start, at least right now, as we're ending this podcast on a Thursday. He's going to play. He's going to start. So, want to end on that, on a K-State former player, Skylar Thompson, going to make a playoff start. Who would have thought about that at the beginning of the season? See, Skylar Thompson make a playoff start? Not me, but Skylar Thompson has done his part, and now he's earned that chance to try to upset Buffalo. In Buffalo, a tall task for the Dolphins.
I will be cheering very hard for Skylar Thompson against the Bills to pull that upset. And then the Dolphins would take the Chiefs if they wanted to in the playoff game, which I would prefer that. And think about this. Skyler could go in, and he could win the game in Buffalo, and then he's from Kansas City, and then he could come to Kansas City and play the Chiefs in the playoffs. Oh, it's all perfect, Eddie. It was meant to be, and then we could end the feel-good story. No, and also it's super pumped for Tyler. Skyler, holy smokes.
Oh boy, run out of steam, folks.
Super pumped for Skyler. Tyler will be the starter for the Ravens likely, but super pumped for Skyler. He deserves this moment. He got them into the playoffs. How cool would it be to see? I know how unlikely it is, Eddie, but how cool would it be to see him pull an upset off of the playoffs and become like the talking point? God, that'd be awesome for him. He deserves it. So, but I'm excited. I'm excited for him that he gets this moment. Win or lose, man, it's a great opportunity for him. And he's earned it. You know, he has earned it. So you can't. It's a feel good story, man. It's a feel good story. Everything he's gone through for him to get an opportunity to start a playoff game. That's something he'll never forget.
Episode 140 of the Purple Project Podcast is in the books. Big thanks to, of course, Alex Aiden out there in San Diego, California for his great analysis. As usual, Eddie Greer here in Manhattan, Kansas. Thank you for listening to another edition, weekly podcast of the Purple Project Podcast. We will be back early next week, of course, looking at KU, and we will recap the games, K-State games anyways, and more likely talk about the Super Wild Card Weekend on what goes down as well. We're going to let Alex close us out to the weekend.
Yes, tune in on Saturday. Check out the cast against TCU. Check out the women's team. Get on the ground. Watch them play there against the Texas Tech, Eddie. I think it was Texas Tech they're playing. Get out there to watch them against Texas Tech. Again, great time to be a Wildcat. And hopefully we have got a TCU win to talk about when we come to you before the KU game. So we'll talk to you guys next time.
for listening to the Purple Project Podcast. Make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We'll talk to you all on the next episode of the Triple P Podcast. Go Cats!